Temperate rainforests make up less than 1% of the world's forests, and the biggest stretch is along the North Pacific coast from southern Alaska to northern California. And now, after years of negotiations, 85% of the Great Bear Rainforest along the coast of British Columbia will be protected, with just 15% open for logging. It's wild and wet there, with giant trees, grizzly bears, gray wolves, salmon, and even the rare and revered white spirit bear. Industry, First Nations, government, and conservationists came together to forge this agreement, and to understand how, we called up Andrew McLeod, a reporter with the Vancouver-based magazine, The Tyee. Andrew, welcome to Living on Earth.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
And I have to ask you about your magazine name, The Tyee.
Yeah, so it's a kind of salmon. We were set up as an alternative to the mainstream media more than 10 years ago, and the idea is sort of a swimming against the current kind of image.
Swimming upstream, huh?
Exactly.
But not endangered as so many salmon are.
No, perhaps under threat, but no.
So tell me about the Great Bear Rainforest in British Columbia. What's it like to be among the trees and wildlife?
The Great Bear Rainforest was, well, it used to be known as the Mid-Coast Timber Supply, and environmentalists renamed it around 1997, the Great Bear Rainforest, and it was the start of a campaign to save it. It's a area of 6.5 million hectares between the top end of Vancouver Island and the Alaska Panhandle. So that's an area about the size of Ireland, and it's quite remote. There are only about 14,000 people who live there. So much of it has never been logged. This is usually described as the largest intact temperate rainforest in the world. Very lush, mossy, moist, year-round ecosystem. They get something like 1.5 meters of rain a year on the coast. So big, big trees, cedars and firs and spruce and such.
And when you say big, big trees, how big are these big trees?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking trees that 5 or 6 people put their arms around. You know, some of the cedars can be, you know, 20 feet in diameter, that kind of thing. Like, they're big, big trees.
Andrew, tell me, what is the spirit bear?
They are a subspecies of black bear. They're a genetic variant that comes out white. So it's a white black bear. There are also grizzly bears there. There are whales, wolves, and just, you know, relatively pristine ecosystem up there.
And who calls them spirit bears? Is this a First Nation thing? Is this something that environmental activists have cooked up? What is it?
My understanding is it goes back through the First Nations. There have always been these genetic variant bears there, and they were seen as special, for sure.
So what does protecting 85% of this forest really mean? I mean, what's permitted in the 15% that's going to be logged?
I mean, the way they describe that is working forest, so it's sort of open for logging, same kinds of standards as the rest of the province. Forest industry will tell you that that means protecting viewscapes, it means protecting old growth, it means protecting habitat for species at risk. In this case, it'll mean protecting bear dens. Critics will tell you that the logging industry always says that kind of thing, and, you know, it'll be destructive, damaging to the ecosystem. But on the other hand, the trade-off is that something like 85% of the remaining forest is being protected there. So it's a balance.
Andrew, what role did the science of ecosystem-based management have in making this plan, do you think?
I mean, that's been part of the talking points from the start, was that they were going to apply ecosystem-based management across the entire land base. You know, often in BC, we're something like 14% covered by parks, but a lot of times the parks they make are, you know, the tops of the mountains, it's the rock, it's the ice, it's, you know, places where there isn't a lot of commercial activity. So the idea is that what's protected will be representative of the different ecosystems that are present in the rainforest. Things right down on the coast, you know, the valley bottoms, which is where the big trees grow.
So how did this agreement come together? Talk to me about the different roadblocks involved in making this work. What, you have industry, you have environmental activists, you have First Nations, the Native American population, we would say, in the United States, and the government. And when we did earlier work on Clackwit Sound, we understood that the BC government was part of the logging industry and that it has an interest in it.
In the Great Bear as well. BC Timber Sales is a government company, and they're one of the license holders up there. BC is very politically divided. You know, there are a lot of people who work in resource industries who, you know, are all for logging it and paving it. And the government, for the most part, over the history of the province, has been involved in encouraging that. And there are a lot of people who are here because it's beautiful, right? People who don't directly depend on resource jobs, but are here because they like the place. And there's a very strong, very healthy environmental movement here. I mean, this is the birthplace of Greenpeace. You know, David Suzuki, the Suzuki Foundation are here. Sierra Club is strong. A group called Forest Ethics were involved as well. You know, there've been fights in BC over land use going back 30 or 40 years. A lot of those fights were sort of valley by valley. Environmentalists sat down and said, well, how do we, you know, what's the next big battle and how do we fight it in a way that makes sense? And they started a markets campaign. So there are five main forest companies that hold the licenses up there. And they went to their customers and said, you know, basically, we'll make it uncomfortable for you if you want to take trees from here and turn them into toilet paper and books and such. You know, we'll make it clear where they're coming from and what the destruction's like on the land. And so the forest companies had incentive to sit down with them. And there was an initial agreement that was heavily towards protection. First Nations were involved in that as well. They went back to their communities, and a lot of the reaction they got was, well, wait a second, we need jobs here as well. They weren't necessarily all for protecting everything. So yeah, we've been looking at 20 years of discussion, 10 years of serious negotiation, and involving all kinds of parties, 26 First Nations, 5 logging companies, 3 environmental groups, provincial government, some local governments. The idea is that they have come to some kind of a balance that everybody can live with.
Before you go, Andrew, tell me, what do you think was the secret sauce that got everybody together this time? You know, longstanding conflict, a lot of discussion, finally a deal.
Going back to when it started, I think it was that threat of the markets campaign. You know, Clackwat Sound, there were something like 700 people arrested there, and there were trials. And it gave forest products from British Columbia a bad name. You know, we were the Brazil of the North. I think the logging companies didn't want to go through that again. And then add into that, First Nations here have seen their rights. I mean, you know, we have a history where the powers in Europe sat down and divided up North America, and BC was property of the Queen and all that, but there were lots and lots of people already living here. You know, lots of First Nations people will tell you they've been on the land for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and it's been sustainable, it's been healthy, that it's really only the last 150 years of colonialism where, you know, you've seen clear cuts and destruction and species driven to extinction. On the other hand, there are lots of people from First Nations who are working in the logging industry today as well. And over time, the First Nations have sort of reestablished their rights. There have been some precedent-setting cases just in the last few years that have recognized Aboriginal title does exist. The first sort of iteration of those court rulings was that First Nations people had to be consulted. The government can't just circle parts on the map and say, yeah, that's open for logging anymore.
Andrew McLeod writes for the Taii and lives in Victoria, British Columbia. Thanks so much for taking the time today, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, and thanks for your interest.